Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Just Another Kill Team Podcast, connecting Kill Team communities across the globe. Your hosts today are me, I'm Jason.
And I'm Travis, regular co-hosts.
We connect with all sorts of different people, TOs, competitive players, and just anyone else that has something interesting to say that they message us and convince us to talk about on an episode.
Yeah, we do like making the world a little bit smaller, one hobbyist at a time.
We do have a Discord and a Patreon, which is definitely some stuff that you should check out if you enjoy our content.
And if you do enjoy this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends who play Kill Team, because the more, the merrier.
In today's episode, we chatted with Jay from Australia, talking about Corsair Voidscarred, as well as the Inquisition. Stay tuned for the conversation.
Hello, hello, hello. Yeah, I'm always quickly getting a coffee from McDonald's.
Okay,
yeah, before, yeah. I had to be on a mute for a little bit.
Are you driving right now?
I'm in my car. I'm not driving anymore. I'm parked right next to the Mecca's.
Oh my goodness.
Wait, the Mecca's?
We call it Mecca's.
Yeah. I mean,
everything. Yeah.
I've had brekkie before. Didn't enjoy it.
Did you have brekkie at Mecca's though?
Did not have brekkie at Mecca's. When I was in Australia, I was trying to get other food, but the food in Australia surprisingly similar to America vibe wise.
Well, the official cuisine of Australia, some may disagree, but is Asian takeaways. So.
Is it like Asian takeaways like the British have, where it's just like a bunch of food in a box?
It's actually very authentic because Australia and Sydney in general, it is actually the most diverse city in the world. So you'd be able to find just about anything.
Nice. Well, I mean, Asian people and Asian food have really kind of like morphed all the way across the world to adapt to everyone's different cuisines. So, and you know, I like all Asian food. Basically, I see a ham and chicken roll served in Sydney. What is this? This looks incredible. And nothing at all like normal Chinese food. Is this?
I'm a bit a bit salty now. I have to line up for my own home cuisine. I'm Korean by descent, so I really enjoyed Korean food out on the streets, but now you actually have to line up and wait.
How's the Korean food in Australia?
It's
compared to, you know,
decent.
Seoul. Not amazing, but not bad.
Yeah, they don't quite do the so they have this thing called gokbon soup. I'm pretty sure you would have had some in New York as well. And that's meant to be, it's meant to be open 24 hours in Korea.
Okay.
They braise it. There's this huge pot they,
I've had, braise. This is a pork soup, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I was in Korea like a year and a half or 2 years ago and had a lot of late night soups, you know, after drinking.
That's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. It's always open.
This is always steaming. Incredibly TTS picture that you've just posted to us.
Whoa.
Okay, well, I mean, we could get right into it, right, Jason?
Oh, yeah.
We're here with, Jay the Sloth, part of the Australian scene and one of the upcoming Australian TOs. I think you have a tournament coming up in April, right, Jay?
Yes, we do indeed.
I want to spread the good word to the Just Another Kill Team listeners, since Sydney, Australia is like one of our largest listener bases. So, you know, now's your time. Tell our listeners a little bit about your upcoming tournament, just so that they know before we get into the festivities.
Yes. In Northern Beaches, there's a shop named Decked Out Gaming. I have affiliated with the manager of the shop to bring out 6 rounds, 2 days. Grand tournament with a golden ticket as a prize to attend to World Championship of Warhammer, and this is only confirmed only recently. Partial payment to your flight ticket is confirmed.
Nice.
We haven't actually decided how much it is going to be. It really depends on your participation to this tournament.
Part of the player entry fee is going into that eventual ticket,
yes,
huh?
Yes.
Hey, that seems really, really cool. That is there like cool. option for like VIP packages to kind of like push that up a little bit? Kind of like, you know, Dota or some other online tournaments kind of, you know, have different tiers of tickets to help support stuff?
I actually had a thought about it. We went both ways on coming up with the idea, but then to be brutally honest, we need your participation to make this all happen. So we set up at a single price ticket to have the tournament. Just everyone to whether you want to come just for one day or both the days, the price is going to be the same for the sake of making these prizes happen. So I was hoping the participants to understand why the decision was made on this particular bit, because everything is just so expensive in Australia at the moment. So having some tickets to be more expensive than the others, it won't really, I don't think it's going to make a great sense to make people understand to have the event at, say, hundreds and two hundreds of dollars. That's not going to be happening. So it's $70 per ticket for 2 days. There is going to be a lot of prizes, both for first, second, third place, and it's going to be a top cut event as well. So the best of the rest, who is essentially the ninth, which would be visible on BCP, they will have almost equal prize to, not quite equal, similar prize to, we haven't actually quite set the prizes what to get, but it'll be pretty handsome, yeah.
You have an idea of what kind of a terrain situation is going to be like right now? I assume you guys are going to take the cues from the rest of the world and keep Beta Decima to the side for the time being, or is that going to be part of the tournament?
No, it's going to be Squad Games LVO Into the Darks map pack for one pod, and the other pod is going to be playing full Beta Decima, and they'll swap each round. So everyone will be playing on the same terrain set for that particular round.
All right, so you're gonna have three or like lots of switches then. It sounds like
there's gonna be a bit of administrative tasks to be done, but I think I can manage it. So I don't think I've said it very well. So let's say Beta Decima pod or play on Beta Decima first round, and Into the Dark pod plays all on Into the Dark on their first round. The second round, they all swap the table to the other side. So one pod will play two Into the Dark, one Beta Decima, and one pod will be playing two Beta Decima and one Into the Dark for the first day.
Yeah, that's going to be quite a shakeup, because having a team that can perform well at Into the Dark and Beta Decima is really something that we haven't seen a lot of. I think that's really interesting. How many people are you roughly expecting to have at the tournament or hoping for?
We can accommodate somewhat over 40, but the tickets are now set at 40 people. If there are going to be more people who wants to participate, we do have enough terrains. We do have enough tables to accommodate the need. I'm just not sure how many people are going to participate. So we'll set it at 40 and see where it goes.
And this is happening, by the time this comes out, this will come out on March 4th, I think. So you'll have, what day is it? It's in April, mid-April, early April?
April 6th and 7th. Okay.
So you got about a month. So listeners in Australia, if you're interested, or anyone in the US who's visiting Australia in that time frame, now's the time to get your tickets. We'll have links in the show notes, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. It'll be available.
Well, so it sounds like Beta Decima in the Dark. What teams is the team thinking are going to be good? You know, I could probably hazard a guess that Pathfinders actually might be Secret Sleeper really good. Because having played at LVO, I definitely won far more of my In the Dark games than I did my open games.
So far, I've been testing it out with players playing Intercession Squad, and I am playing Phobos at the moment, because as we been talking about it, Phobos is a lifestyle choice, and in the end, all Kill Team players end up playing Phobos. They obviously have a big play in Beta Decima, and so are the Intercession squad. I haven't quite got to check with the Pathfinders. Elite definitely have a better position in Beta Decima than Stay Into the Dark or now the norm Octarius Terrain set.
Yeah, I especially the Phobos. I mean, like, they've got all the tricks, the auto pass jump and ignore obscuring and all that. And Intercession is just, like, chunky and thick, and they can just jump out there and stand on objectives.
Yeah, everyone's been just kept on playing rapid and usually picks. I've been testing out people playing durable, hardy back again. I think they've got some big plays by third turning point, because they can just stand on the objective markers. And we play with objective terrain rather than tokens or markers. And we've been talking about the one with the vantage, the one with the hatch as a piece. We specifically wanted those to be on the ground and provide the vantage to some, because there's like maps with 2 inches behind the center line that they can score vantage on it, as well as it actually provides cover. And if you're on the first level of gantry, and if you specifically measure the vantage of that objective marker to the gantry, it's less than 2 inches. So it actually doesn't blow the conceal in cover. So that's actually going to be one of the jank that we'll have to outline in the tournament. We'll need to play some more games, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a weird arrangement.
This is when you're on top of the Beta Decima soup can and shooting down, yes, onto a first level gantry. The distance is less than 2 inches, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Does that vibe out with what I remember? I thought it was just a little bit more, but maybe I'm misremembering right now.
But another jank on top of that is that if you stand on the objective marker of the gantry, then measure that.
Oh, yes. The objective marker is
more than 2 inches.
Interesting.
So objective markers to objective marker, it'll always you'll always be treated as engaged for the part of the shooting attack. But
yeah,
so
for listeners who don't remember, vantage points don't actually do anything unless they are 2 inches higher than wherever you're currently standing. So because on Beta Decima, about half, I think a little over half of the objective markers are vantage points, because they're flat round circles and you can stand on top of them. There is room, it sounds like, for you to stand on an objective marker and get the extra 2 inches to shoot down on someone, which is pretty funny.
It's I gotta say a bit of a shout out to Decked Out Gaming as well. They kindly supported 6 Beta Decima sets, and with the community's help, we'll have more than 10 Beta Decima sets to play frequently and in the tournament. So we've been having, unlike other part of the world, we've been quite enjoying the games played here in Sydney. So it'll be very interesting.
Have you had some of the similar issues that players have had on some of the maps? Because, you know, colloquially, from the one tournament that I've run in New York where we played all Beta Decima, 5 and 6 definitely got like a resounding do not like. Is it the same in Sydney, or has there been a kind of a discovery of different tricks that help you do those Death Valley runs up the board with people who have vantage down on those two long maps?
So what that's why I specifically separated the Beta Decima round to be played individually, because to play it competitively, I personally think that it's a 2-2 game rather than a 3-3 game on primaries.
Mm-hmm.
So if everyone is to be careful, avoid jump tests and be each holding 2 objective markers by first turning point and prepare for second turning point, then there are less janks to be aware of and less argument and disputes to be had, because from second turning point, it's proper shootout.
Okay, so you're trying to avoid the scoring issue by having everybody flip-flop between In the Dark and Beta Decima. Does that mean that you're playing all of the Beta Decima maps, or are you rotating those maps through a couple of the better maps, quote-unquote, like maybe missions 1 through 4, like every round, or what's going on there? That was what my core ask was.
So map 6 is definitely out.
Yeah.
We're not going to play that map.
That's good. I'm sure everybody who's played on it loves to hear that, because having played on it a couple times, I can't imagine a Melee team doing well there ever, even if you changed the Melee teams a lot. But unless they change how that map is actually laid out. Like, you could physically change the layout of the map, but played as is Mission 6 is extremely rough with those two Death Valley runs where vantage points watch over any position you can get to.
I totally agree on that. It's a bit of a no one can get to the Not even void dancers can't even get to the objective markers on the furnace unless they put a fortify on the furnace and put another barricade on their territory and exactly stand on the midpoint at the start of the turning point, which is wide open. So it's not gonna be a great competitive map per se. So 1 to 5, I personally don't like 1, but I'll have to play more of it and decide whether it's going to be played or not. So what I am getting at is that Beta Decima, if you play it competitively, you will score significantly lower than Into the Dark set or say in the open.
Like the split of objectives that you're realistically expecting to get is lower. So you're adjusting that in your community by saying everyone is going to have to play the exact same number of rounds. So if it gets down to a tiebreaker, everyone will have had the same chances to play on those maps, at least.
That's right. I think that's a nice
halfway point. So we're expecting that Intercession or Elites in general are doing better, because on In the Dark, they're big and chunky. They can stay in cover and they can pop out into rooms and get people. And then on Beta Decima, because other people are going to struggle with cover, the Intercession and the Phobos basically have fewer operatives. They can ignore obscurity and they can basically take their shots, is kind of what you're feeling at the moment. But who knows, right? This will be an interesting judge call when you finally get there and see what actually happens, because you've got some of the best players in the world. You know, Alexa's coming, I assume.
Yes, he's already got the ticket, so
is Liam headed over as well?
Oh well, he'll have to. It's decked out. Gaming is actually Liam's
shop.
Yeah.
So, and for listeners who don't know who I'm talking about, Alexa is the world championship winner. He won on Cults, and Liam is the other person who came to the world championships alongside Alexa. He recently just won his return ticket to the world championships on Novitiates. So maybe he'll be making a return, or, you know, maybe he'll be on something else.
Yeah, he's been doing pretty well. And I was very happy for who I would want them to have them representing Australia for World Championship Warhammer. So along with Sam as well, Sam's a great player. He plays his Vet Guard very well. And as a little bit of a poke, I would like him to play other factions better as well. But that's another story. And I hope they all do very well in World Championship Warhammer when the time comes.
Seems like this would be a good time to jump into our niche tactics. You said that you had something that you wanted to chat about, and we've got a picture here. Maybe we can attach a link to this for the listeners as well.
It'll be up on our Patreon shortly, I assume. Or it'll have been up on our Patreon, you know, well in advance of this conversation showing up on the internet.
Yep, so you can pop in and take a look.
So this is a very, very niche tactics. It's specifically related to Corsairs playing in Into the Dark. And this has come up between me and myself and Alexa's match, where he was trying to be within a millimeter of outside of the hatch wall so that he can lock my Corsair operative.
I see it now. So you can't.
To be outside of 3 inches charge with deadly ambush. But we were obviously furiously arguing about it. Then I catted it up and realized that the tangential point and of the engagement range of 28 mil and 32 mil does not allow the gaps to be filled. So you can always make deadly ambush charge if you are less than an inch behind the hedge.
All right. So the goal here is that if you are directly an inch behind the hatchway concealed, you can sit behind a door and your opponent can't move and shoot you because they can't get within two to get a shot off. And they cannot.
Yes.
So basically, you can always make a charge. Because, and there's like,
yes,
and there's
yes.
no way where the 3 inches will get you stuck. And then the yes. real question is whether or not someone can set up a position where they can shoot you through the door and they are drawing their cover line just through the access point. But if this is going to work, maybe in Australia, you guys play with the bottom of the access point gives you cover.
We use the physical line. We follow specifically to the rule book where the picture is drawn that
Basically, the access point is to the edges of the door frame. So is there a way for someone to actually get a line where they don't, where when you're standing at the center point?
That's why I've said less than an inch. The Corsair operative will always be in cover. So maybe GDOT needs to, I don't know, it's too niche for them to really care about it. But at this point, Corsairs behind the hatch, while it's active or in concealed, ready while it's concealed, it's invincible.
So you're saying that with this image, you've already marked out where the access point is so that there's no way to draw a cover line that just runs through the middle of the door frame? Because it looks like right now from the positioning of this object, you know, you're right in the center of the door access point. There's no way to get like someone, you know, 4 inches away that's just drawing a cover line straight through the access point to doink you.
I'll share another picture. So the purple circle represents
I'm sorry, listeners.
This is how we stay the on least, the top.
This is by far the least accessible position we've ever been on for this podcast. We are looking at a hardcore CAD documentation trying to find a way that this works. All right. So the blue circle is your Corsair base, I assume?
No. Purple is the Corsair. Is, let's say for the fun of it, a scout hunter. And however you sway your operative around, the hatch is, depending on the manufacturer's allowance, it's going to be 74 millimeters.
Okay. All right. So I think I can agree with the core argument here. So you're saying that if you have two Corsairs on conceal behind a door, you can block off people from flipping to the other side and charging through, right? So you can always
The circle is the movement. Circle is the movement of these following purple circles. It represents the movement of one Corsair operative. So it will never be in line of sight. It will
unsurprisingly,
have the
for anyone who can't follow this conversation, unsurprisingly, Corsairs on in the dark, very powerful, especially with the new deadly ambush rule.
So this is like you set up a deadly ambush, you set up a Corsair on a door for a deadly ambush, and it is impossible for someone to open the door or approach the door without being deadly ambushed.
Exactly. Yeah. So it fortifies that exact idea that people might argue that if I am here, then I won't be able. No, they'll always get deadly ambushed, regardless of any other rules.
Yeah, I suspect that this is one of those situations where, just like a Wormblade Locust or a couple other things, where your opponent sets it up and you either have to take the choice of avoiding it or running into it and then dealing with running into it, right? This is not there's no real way around the deadly ambush on in the dark, right? Because the 3-inch bubble is so massive. The reason why talons are so good on in the dark is those five 3-inch injury bubbles from the Sisters of Silence basically just dominates every single objective across the entire board. And that's really where custodies are very, very strong in the dark. So similar to that, because now Corsairs have this new 3-inch deadly ambush rule where you can pop out of conceal to go hit someone, you know, on in the dark, your Corsairs are way more dangerous around doors, corners, and basically anywhere where you can park a dude and not get shot.
So there is no way Corsairs can be fortuned in any scenario, in any sort of asymmetric, symmetric ITD maps. There is always going to be an opportunity for at least Corsairs to be having three primaries, turning point one. So it's very strong. Corsairs actually, I think it's an Alexa and I were having this conversation about this as well. They're probably the top team in Into the Dark at the moment before the ballot is data slate drops.
Have you considered five Assault Intercessors and a Doom Bolter running at you, though?
It's, in the end, it's a dice game, and neither of them really have a good rerolls, right? So it's probably going to be like a dumb game.
The Intercession have good rerolls. An Intercession have good rerolls when they go into
that's
combat.
One balanced reroll on Chainsword. So some
six dice on threes means that you're generally going to hit like three or four dice. Like, that's not that crazy on threes, right?
This is when we meme about it and yell outcast, but then it's not really going to happen. Yeah. actually helps. It helps, but we're not going to get into it.
Yeah, since we're on niches for Corsairs, obviously this is a very powerful niche tactic, but there are other things that are good about Corsairs. You want to talk through maybe one of the other scenarios where maybe like a Shredder might get a blast that people aren't ready for just because of the way In the Dark works and the way that Corsairs work?
So the operative that is quite critical in playing around Into the Dark specifically is the Wayseeker. The Psyker, who will be wall folding, in other words, teleporting other operatives. And one real threat to Corsairs and Into the Dark is the 3 inches indirect, which behind the hatch, it can be covered by, deadly ambush. So it doesn't have to be a melee operative. Everyone has a power sword except one guy who's the, sniper. I always give him the knife, but
in the Psyker, the Psyker's got a bonk stick instead of a power sword.
Oh, yes, that too. It's a force something, isn't it?
I think it's four dice on threes, 3-5 or something. It's not great. And it's got stun, probably.
Sounds right.
It's a bonk stick.
So the usual play we have is the plasma grenade is armed by Shade Runner. But the Shade Runner, we talk about the Alpha Strike. I think the last episode when Alexa was on it, he was talking about it and not throwing it. That's already in the play. And we go a little further and likely you warp for the either the Duelist or the Fate Dealer, the Sniper, because Fate Dealer is always with the equipment super concealed that the only threat they have is indirect grenade, which also back again, which is always within the deadly ambush range.
Okay, yeah. So basically the ability on Corsairs to dominate with deadly ambush means that opponents have to make sure they're popping the trap with someone who can deal with the trap, right? And then because you can have multiple chain activations and teleports, it means that you can actually treat some long range threat on In the Dark, specifically like a 4 APL operative, because you can have the Psyker flip a person, get closer, then have the leader open a door, chain activate someone else, and then that person can now move dash, free open a door with the light fingers, and then do a thing, either the Shredder or a plasma grenade.
Yes.
So those are like
with this deadly ambush buff. Yes, very, very powerful. With this deadly ambush buff, you can set up your operatives as if on one side, at least as if you are going to win the initiative. And if you do win the initiative, then the leader and the duelist can obviously just open the hatch and start blasting. And that happens every game if you do win the initiative. And if you lose the initiative, then you're safe behind the deadly ambush cover. So it's very powerful.
This is for like a turn two kind of like alpha at this point now, right? Because you can use deadly ambush on turn one to stay very safe, control points, control space, maybe even keep an opponent off of one of their points, because, you know, if they come up too far, they're in range of getting AP2'd or shreddered with lethal five. And then on turn two, now you're fully safe behind your threat of activation.
That's it. So what actually happens in the game is that we're all holding three objectives each and nothing happens, because we are now aware of this, that we don't even bother to. If Corsairs starts to move forward, then the opponent will just let them, because there's no way to get around it. It's better to just go around the other side of the map at this point.
All right. So you haven't run into situations where people are like throwing good melee operatives into range to kind of like force a deadly ambush and make it force you to spend the CP?
If we're talking about casual games with new people, then obviously it's played very differently. I'm not going to sit behind the hedge and explain in a paragraph that why you can't do such things. This is between the top contenders, who apparently is the team that I am always playing with. And it's, let's say, Alexa, Liam, Emma, Sam, Christine, and I must have missed out on some names, but we will always discuss as if we're actually I'm memeing about this as well. Have you seen Key and Peele's Mexican Standoff?
I've seen that.
Yes. So it becomes that sort of a conversation that you knew that you were going to do that all along. And then it becomes a stalemate. So somebody has to make a move. And it becomes, it's still a casual setting, but it's a very different casual games that you could think of compared to some of the learning introductory games that I do quite often. So no one will bear to charge and rely on the dice because we are not very good at rolling dice, apparently. No one seems to do that very well. So rolling dice is not my perks, and that's actually one of the main reasons why I actually started organizing tournaments and events than to actually play the game, because I'm very good at rolling ones, and that set me off from contending for the golden ticket. In Oceanic Circuit Final, I drove with a couple of guys to Melbourne. It was 1,000 kilometers. It was a long day, and I was sleep deprived and all that. But regardless of all that, I started playing with my Hearthkins against Legionary, and I had a perfect opportunity to move dash and shoot my 1-inch super crack grenade on twos with all the
fixings, with
everything was available. I rolled one crit and three ones, and obviously this Nurgle Legionary had implacable, and nothing happened. And that was the start of it. And
yes. For listeners who don't know, 1,000 kilometers, 600 freedom miles.
So that was my first round. I rolled total like 21s in that game.
Nice. That definitely puts a damper on some of the competitive spirit sometimes.
Yes. Liam and Alexa, they were, and Sam as well, they were all on their bye round because of the number of the contenders were not quite in even numbers, and there was to be no ties to this particular event, that the top five contenders had a bye round. That's how the tournament was played. So I'm not going to argue about what would have been the best outcome, but that set me. So they already have a win on the table. So, and it sent me off to with another event organizer in Melbourne. And shout out to Levon. We had a great game, man. So it became a very fun, eventful tournament that I always wanted to enjoy. But I was always caught up winning the game rather than enjoying the event itself. So it got me thinking quite a bit after playing with a lot of the Melbourne players too, that maybe I needed to focus more on organizing events and bring up the spirit of the game rather than just play to win. So that was actually the core reason why I got to get into organizing events.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big part of why me and Jason are even doing this podcast, right, Jason?
Yeah. I mean, and like in every scene that's going off, there's someone that's like running the events, and without that, the scene isn't really gonna pop off. So that's a very important role, and it's very admirable. So thanks for doing that.
How have you felt like the community response has been in Sydney for you? You know, obviously you're not the first Australian TO we've had on here. We've had bands on, you know. What do you think is making the difference between your two different TO scenes? Or do you feel like there's a little bit more kind of like spirit of togetherness on all the scenes in Australia at the moment?
So I had a good thought about it. And so Sydney is geographically divided in north and west. So north to city is quite accessible. West to city is quite accessible, but not quite west to north. So the players grew into particular shops, and it really came down to what the organizer was focusing on. And bands, obviously, he does very well putting people on their list and introducing the game, and so getting them on board. He does a very good job at it. I'm gonna be criticizing myself for I may be seen as too sweaty for new players, especially people who come up with particular reasons per se. I just want to roll some dice and have fun. That's like, you hear that quite often.
Mm-hmm.
But this is another thing that I wanted to discuss as well, that you would say that, and you bring your commandos, and this is pre-nerf, and you triple git, and you move dash, and you move and throw your dynamite. Then this is meant to be their first introductory game. You haven't got your core rules down set yet, but you know enough that this is a very strong play. Then, and by all means, I'm okay with that. It's on at this point that you want to win, right? So I think that came across as bit of a friction I had with some players when I was getting them on board. Some people obviously stayed and are very sweaty and very competitive. Some people turned away because of the games they found. They didn't get to do what they wanted to do, I suppose. But in the end, I think Kill Team is inherently a competitive game. And hobby and the lore side of the things, it's all great in nature. But I do feel that if you want to hang out with the community and enjoy the game itself, I think there needs to be a good distribution of wanting to be better and wanting to win. And I think I can provide that opportunity if you come to my setting around in the northern areas in the Sydney. So that's what I really wanted to tell to the audience who will be listening to this podcast.
So you were saying that you were the one playing commandos with the triple sneaky git, or saying people?
No.
People in their first game, they're like, "Oh, I want to play," and they're just doing this thing because they've heard about it and they wanted to do it. And you're like, "All right, I'm going to take the kid gloves off."
I think
to be fair, I do think that Kill Team is definitely kind of a more inherently competitive game than some other stuff that Games Workshop produces, just because there are more rerolls and there's more ways to adjust fate. So like, if you know what to adjust, you're going to get more value out of it long term. And because things are back and forth, there's a lot more interaction that you need to pay attention to. So like, making sure that people are measuring correctly. At the World Championships, I was surprised at how important it was, just because not everyone is taking those measurements as seriously as some other players do. You know, making sure that measuring implements are on the table and not floating above the table, that actually makes a huge difference. And those are like things that not everyone caught right away, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yes.
That said, Kill Team is very competitive, there's still room for players to like go around and just roll dice and have fun. But I do know that there is kind of like a knowledge gap that happens, where if you don't want to interact with the game in the knowledge gap, where I have to like figure out what my opponent's doing, I have to figure out what my team is doing, the game can quickly kind of like fall away from you if you're playing against people who are doing that. So there is a balance to be made. And there's also like different player groups to encourage, right? Like, I know in my scene, the narrative scene is just as vibrant as the competitive scene, because some people actually do just want to hang out, have the Doom Bolter run around and delete people. And, you know, maybe the Doom Bolter is better than I expected, because Jason did pretty well at LVO. So there's room for different kinds of strategies. It's not always about like what is the most meta and most competitive, but you do have to play the game and try to actively get better if you do want to see your win rate go up. You can't just play kind of on autopilot with a meta list, because everything that's good is the meta list in Kill Team, unlike something like Age of Sigmar or Warhammer, where list building matters far more than some of the actual play sometimes.
That's right. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, so what do you think? So you think that you're able to provide that kind of like sweaty but friendly atmosphere?
Yes.
What kind of things do you think that you are doing? Yeah, what kind of things do you think that you're doing to help push that along, so that, you know, other TOs who are thinking about spinning up their scenes can hear what you're doing in Australia and kind of take a little bit from it? What would you tell some of the newer TOs that are coming up?
So I tend to give blatantly untrue and unrealistic advice when people are struggling with their game. Let's say two new players are playing against each other, then they get into analysis paralysis, and I just tell them, like, you move, you dash, and you shoot and roll sixes, and then that's it, and that's how you win the game. Liam here, that's how he won his GT. Alexa here, that's how he won his golden ticket. He rolled a lot of sixes and it's rending, so it becomes two crits. And and those sort of conversations eases off a lot of the tensions that people seem to have when especially when it's two new players playing against each other, and it becomes the sweatiest game that you will ever see, because both of them don't know enough to get around the problem they are facing on that particular activation. So rather than and when I do my introductory game myself as well, rather than giving them paragraphs after paragraphs of rules, I tend to pick on what he or she may be doing wrong on movement. Let's say they're moving, they're saying they are moving 2 inches, but they're doing it in the air with the gauge. So they say they'll be moving like 8-10 inches. Then rather than say, no, you're wrong, you're moving too far. I've learned this from other tournament organizers as well, that we should measure this together. And I think it's a little too far. Let's measure this together. And as you can see, he needs to be 1 inch out of the corner to make that movement. And I'll usually just pick out on what they can't do and ask them to make their own decision. And I usually am pretty patient with their activations and such, that learning games usually hangs around 3 to 4 hours. But the next game they play, then they'll play a lot better and a lot faster. And that was the same with everyone, really. Even Liam and Alexa again. And Sam was already available and ready to play in the tournament when I met him for the first time. So there are a lot of the others that who got to be in that particular spot where they started really slow, and now they are considered as one of the top contenders representing Australia. So I look forward to people to come to all these events, not just the Grand Tournament. There are other two events that's to happen, not particularly organized by myself, but Emma and Chris, they are also organizing 2v2 events next week. And there's a 4 rounds tournament in Castle Hill RSL end of this month. It's already March, yeah. So there will be plenty of events for people to learn, enjoy, play, win. So it's really for an individual to ask questions, and every one of us who's in the competitive environment will be there to provide the support, because we want more players.
Yeah, and you want everybody to find a friend to play their favorite game with, right? And that's really what tournaments are about. Getting out and playing games with people you haven't met, who might be your friends. You just haven't met them yet.
That's exactly it.
So, you know, Australia's got a pretty vibrant scene. You've got a couple of different TOs. You've got, you know, bands doing large tournaments. You're doing a large tournament coming up. And I think there's also a world team championship team going. It sounds like you guys have two teams. Alexa's heading up one, and I assume Liam is heading up the other.
I think they are all one team. I'm actually quite out of this because they left me out because they know. So this is with too good with each other that a lot of the things are actually not said. So they just didn't even consider me as part of the team because I'm actually pretty busy and I got a family to take care of as well. So I'm like, no, Jay's out. We're gonna look for other players in Sydney, and well, you can come and you can come. So we don't have the qualifying rounds for WTC because that actually is I don't know if it's a problem, but player. Proven best player is going to World Team Championship. I don't think it's really an issue. Yeah,
that's good. I mean, so Australia's got a lot going on. Tell us a little bit about some of the big members of your community. I know we've mentioned Alexa, Liam, Sam. These are all people that are going to the World Championships, but there's probably other people in the background that are helping Jay, the Sloth, help build up their tournament scene. You know, anyone else you want to call out? Hometown heroes, as it were?
I'll start from people who's furthest away, Jason, Jespun, the Jason from, but he's actually Australian. But
yeah, that's right, Jespun from he was
building a scene in Canada.
Yes.
I need to give him a shout out, and so is Ace, helping me build a community. I'm using the Spanish model to build a community altogether. Thanks for all the advices, and everyone in the team skill issue, you've all been great. And specifically Raphael for naming the team skill issue. It's been a great journey, and I'd like to carry forward with all the challenges to overcome. So all the good thanks to everyone about it. I did say everyone in skill issues, so they know who they are. I don't think I have to name the names.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, we do want to make sure that we do our operative showdown this week, right? And sounds like, in our pre-show notes, you talk about Inquisition Agents, one of the famously teams with the most operatives. So,
yes.
Jason, you want to kick us off a little bit?
Yeah, so for the operative showdown, we like to compare different groups here. I mean, there's a lot of options to compare with Inquisition because of all the different support choices. And then, like, once you do go into the support choices, there's combos there. What are your top two support slots?
Oh, I'm going to be very contentious here because I don't play like the others with the Inquisitorial Agents. I take Infiltrate as the Tech Ops.
Oh, okay. Pray tell. Tell us more.
And look, I need to give a bit of a background. So the tournaments that we've been having, I'm a fine purveyor of chess clock, but not a lot of the tournaments involved chess clocks. And if you play horde teams in general, the opponent runs out of time, but we can't prove that. So I always was locked out in this opponent's analysis paralysis and score comparatively less than my other contenders. So what I come up with was to grab Infiltrate and score early. So even if the game stops in mid turning point, then I'll have sufficient points to advance into the next round. And if you bring Gather Surveillance and Stalk Target with right support, you can actually get ahead 4 points, 3 points, 4 points ahead of your opponent. And one of them is going to be Breaches and Kasakin. But here's the caveat. You bring the cat. So with the cat and a smoke grenade, you throw your smoke grenade somewhere randomly and you assign Gather Surveillance as your cat, and it's people will see that, oh, cat is going to, because it moves 8 inches, that people will think, oh, he's just going to move into the smoke to avoid all the target. So some people will go into the smoke to prevent that. Some people will set up around the smoke to prevent that as well. But that wasn't it. That was actually, what I was trying to do was gather surveillance in other part of the territory and stalk target whoever is near the smoke. So
it's a decoy. This is a hilarious mind game level. I have not even considered existing.
I did this a lot.
How many times does this work, Jay?
Every game, I was fighting for a podium on the, not this one, but the last GP with this. I know I'm a bit arrogant in that sense, but I'm all right. I'm all right. I do a lot of things that no one really expects. I play headhunters, assassinate target and no witnesses and maxim. So it's just such a flex if you do score it, though.
Look, Jason does this kind of stuff, too. He was doing assassinate target for, like, months.
Oh, yeah. It's been one of my favorites.
It's 100% the best tech op you can take for into Storyline Agents. Yeah. You just need to move, dash, shoot, and kill. Easy as it gets done, yeah.
Okay, so you're taking the Navis cat unit so that you can get the 8-inch move for gather surveillance with it somewhere else, and then stock target for the smoke grenade. So the smoke grenade is a misdirect because people expect the cat is going to go there. So they run a dude to block the cat from doing some other stuff, and you get the extra value of now your opponent's trying to interact with your cat unit and stop some other stuff, but you're actually misdirecting them. So you're using the Navis breachers with infiltrate, which is not standard at all. So tell us a little bit more about your other, you know, operative choices, because it's not just a cat, right? Cat, there's probably other stuff that you're doing with the breachers that maybe some people aren't expecting if this is going to be your line of attack on a overall game plan.
Yes. Now that Interrogator and Skullbook is going to be GA2, that I have enough activations to swap books around. So one thing I can do is, usually the Interrogator has the I always get this wrong.
Basically the offense book where you get an extra die when you go into fight. So it's 5 dice on threes for everything, or 4 dice on threes with his power sword. So he's a good, he's another good operative. But if you're tossing the book over to the skull, what's the game plan here with your trick play?
So this smoke is on that we've just talked about. Skull goes into the smoke.
Okay.
And somebody is outside of the smoke, and Navis Laz Volley will have 7 attack relentless on 4+.
Oh, Jesus. With relentless.
Yes. So so turning point one is a lot of throwaways, and only operative who can really shoot is Navis Laz Volley. We know that the Servitor is not going to shoot anywhere unless the terrain provides some sort of advantage on their deployment. So it takes a lot of setup. Sometimes even I forget what I get to do. That's the problem with Inquisitorial Agents. You're your own worst enemy. The book, people might think that he's just there to be next to the Servitor to provide one less dice. That's not true. You can always use it to be part of the, because it flies. Unfortunately, it only moves 6 inches. Having the book, you can always out activate the opponent, and you can always be near 2 inches by turning point two. It's just when to activate this guy and when to make the shooting. And this brings up to another operative in other support team group, which is Kasakin, and the recon troopers' new ability. It's, you can use that to shoot plasma cannon in impossible angle now. And this time the book will disintegrate with the other operatives. Book is going to go in the game. It's going to die. So you can always, it's about having the Interrogator and the book to have the very typical setup, and then swapping the book, that's really important. Like, no one really does that. they always go on their separate ways to, like, Book does this Book thing, and I mean the Skull does his Skull thing, and Interrogator moves and dashes and shoots and then dies the next activation. But you can always be cagey about it, and it's hard to just talk about one operative because you always need to put it into a combination. Kasekin can, with the Recon Trooper, they can almost do Into the Breach. You'll spend a lot of CP about it, but I did that as a meme play, everyone going up on the Vantage with the CPs and started shooting at the light covers. It really depends on what the map is. If it's anything like open maps that we are practicing on in Australia, you can spend CP to play extra scouting plus the Recon Trooper to make the Sniper and the Servitor and another AP2 weapon of your choice to be on the Vantage. And they also have a, it would come with a 45 though. So have them all 45 on the next to the Vantage. And where we go with this is that we don't make the shooting. We just prevent the opponent from advancing into their objective markers. So there is a lot of area denial with Inquisitorial agents with all this setup playing. And once that's achieved, then you can infiltrate as much as you want.
Yeah, so let me just recollect all of that, because that's actually a pretty good line that I don't think anyone has ever... I haven't heard anyone talk about too much, because most of the attention, as far as Inquisitorial agents goes, gets really focused in on the Breachers and Vetguard, because you get six activations and lots of good abilities. But right now we're talking about how the Recon Trooper with his Reconteur kill zone allows you to get a free Recon action because you took the Recon Trooper. That means that you can also take an embedded agent, which is your one CP ploy, to get a repeat scouting option or do your scouting option after you see your opponents. But in this case, because you get a free recon, now you can double recon and you can play embedded agent again to get fortify.
Yes.
Or actually, no, you can just start with fortify and then you get two recons. And now if your open board is one of the ones where some midline objectives are actually covered by vantage points, then now your embedded agents, you can sacrifice two shooters to basically give you cover on top of a point. So if your opponent comes out too far, you nuke them. Otherwise, now you have two guys guarding vantage points that everyone else on your side can use safely. And those are like your last two objective or last two operatives.
That's it.
Yeah, that's a really good, that's actually a really good point that I don't think anyone has ever really talked about. And Kasekin do give you the flexibility on the team of double comms, which is not a thing the team normally has.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, as Kasekin has shown, double comms is very good because you can either backload APL, because APL, if used after an operative has already gone, allows you to keep that APL until its next activation, which means that if you do it at the end of turn one, you can actually set up four operatives to have four APL basically going into turn two, because you have two that have already gone, and then the following turn you put another two on two that haven't started yet, so you have four operatives ready to go with plus one APL, which can be a lot to deal with against some teams, which Kasekin can get lots of use out of this, and Inquisition agents can also use. Are there any other kind of like Kasekin secret trick plays that you've been scheming up?
Kasekin, I usually play Kasekin to play security to do seize ground or escort operative, and no one expects comms to be far forward, so because usually the comms always give out APL and sit stationary. So from second turning point, I slowly start moving comms forward because I've already assigned him as escort operative. Then sometimes I'll just give out APL a third turning point only to move and dash fourth turning point just enough to score one victory point, but just enough to win. So people are always caught up with some tech ops I think it has to do with a lot of the tournaments having the secondaries as their tiebreaker, that everyone wanted to max tech ops and give up on primaries. But sometimes the game gets gnarly enough that 1 point will do it. So it's having the option to leave out the operative to score just enough to win that actually really sets the mood of the game. So I recommend using comms to not just give out APL, but move about and give more threat to your opponent.
Really a big fan of the Mysterex over here, huh, Jay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm my crowd knows really very much about it. It's been sort of... I'm diverting off a little bit, but Jason might have seen me in the chat recently, but I'm right now trying to sell Phobos comms.
Okay. Oh,
I should actually have said that. Yeah.
You know, we'll take another diversion into Phobos week. You know, it happens every week. You know, go ahead to give us the spiel on the comms infiltrator, an operative that many, I think, have basically decided is terrible, unless you're playing against exactly Space Marines or some other elites where you could drop the saboteur mine and then force it to go off at least.
I mean, like every other elite faction has 6 activations, but if you bring comms with it, it becomes 7 activations. It's going to be very limited, but it's 7 activations regardless. So one thing that you could do is you could move your Reaver Surgeon, move and dash, pick up for free because you already played the Vanguard. And this is specifically Beta Decimar, actually. I should have mentioned that. On the vantage objective that we talked about, on the ground, and you, the smoke is now you, with your last action point, you pop up a smoke and you can make your comms to loot that objective. Oh, and you tear it. I always forget to mention it. So for anything that you lack, you can always ask the comms to support that idea. Everyone thinks I'm talking bollocks, but I have yet to fail with my comms what they are meant to do. I'm always successful with comms on that very last action that will determine the direction of the game. Such as like it's like breaches comms and escort operative. Everyone's been saying like escort operative is not a great tackle. I've scored it every single time. So I mean, like, I think one of the great UK breacher player who couldn't come to the Dan, he always seems to play escort operative with his breaches. So it's a similar idea in that sense. That you can always score with something the opponent doesn't expect you to have. So tech op choices as well. It goes through, it's for all factions, I think. Everyone goes for recon and do recover item and vantage and their faction tech op. But if you do something else, then the opponent doesn't have a play because they don't know what you're doing. So you should be still be thoughtful and be honest and play with full of intent, but you don't have to share your strategy or tactics. So I think it comes down to balance between having a good intent and trying to juke the opponent.
And Jason, what do you feel about the comms infiltration that really gets your opponent where they weren't expecting?
You know, I noodled around with the comms and I haven't had a whole lot of success. There's a couple times I brought them though. Like if I'm going to bring a third infiltrator, I'll bring the comms. And then the reason for that is because I need one more body to stay hidden and run over and grab an objective. And then while he's there, it might as well be someone that can omni scramble someone on the next turn. And then if he signals the sergeant to give me one extra command point on his way, since Phobos is such a CP hung team. So it'll just be like, Pretty early on in the first turn, he will signal the sergeant to give me the CP so the sergeant can spend all three. He'll run over and just stay hidden and like loot or secure a point or something like that. And then Omni scramble on someone on the next turn. And then after that, he's just a dork with lethal five.
So I assume that you're using installed device at this point, then, if you're playing a comms, right, Jay?
Oh, no. That tech op needs to go away.
Where's this comms? Where's this comms kill going? Yeah, but I mean, so, that doesn't matter about the comms, right? How does the comms help you get subversive control?
No, subversive control, gather surveillance, and shock and awe is probably the choice for my infiltrate tech op on forward striking, because no one expects comms to be like, with all comms, not just Phobos, you expect them to do these actions. It's about at least our Phobos infiltrators can shoot on level five. Gather surveillance on comms will be available because he'll be in a position where it doesn't need to be with. Let's Helix Adept is always going to be there. So everyone will be at least 3 to 6 inches apart while comms can freely roam around. So it's your Reaver Sergeant and your comms who'd be doing a lot of the heavy lifting. That by the third turning point, the game will shift around on BD and ITD specifically, open it a little harder, that the game will shift to that you will infiltrate into one side of the opponent's territory and you would have given up your side of the territory, and it will be either going clockwise or counterclockwise most of the time. So that's when comms shine, that you can always do one more action just enough to not just on Reaver Sergeant strategize, but let's say you just need another loot to win, or you just need another fight action to lock the opponent or kill another operative. That's all possible if you have the comms available. So I've been trying to sell this to everyone on Discord server a lot of the times. No one seems to believe me, but I'm going to make this happen, and soon enough, comms will be the meta.
The comms meta is just around the corner.
The misdirects are strong. I guess, you know, Jason is the resident Phobos player right now, is going to have to give that one a try.
I know very well about his five incursors. I think it's a great strategy. Yeah, I'm on board with that idea. And comms.
Five incursors plus comms.
After you've double shot and your opponent's trying to respond to the obscurity, you know, flicking back to conceal, that actually sounds kind of juicy now, right, Jason?
Okay. Well, actually, I want to leave him on engage for more Overwatch.
That's true. All right. Okay, well, you know, are there any final calls you want to do? You know, final last calls to the tournament? We've got a tournament coming up on the 6th of April where we might get a small portion of the ticket proceeds that help the winner go to the World Championships. Sounds like three people who are already going to the World Championships are already going. So it means that you might not have to get first. You might be able to get away with second and still go to the World Championships, right?
So I do not know what is going to happen to the existing golden tickets, but the winner of the tournament will get this golden ticket and the prize.
Yeah, in so the past, just to clarify, you can always pass your tickets down. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So you can always give it to the next person down. So if Alexa wins, he could definitely give his unpaid ticket from the last year's World Championship over to the next player. Mm-hmm. That's not an issue, at least from the GW side, having done it a couple times. So,
right. That's good to know. There was a few questions that was raised in our community, so I just wanted to iterate that. The more about the structure of the tournament, I just wanted to really get this down. So I forgot to miss it out. So on what happens on day one is that people will swap their tables around specifically to play one particular terrain set. And what determines the top four places of the each pod, then they'll be the top cut, and they'll only play with themselves on day two.
Crazy.
And the rest of the people will, then it becomes a mixed board that they'll have to fight for best of the rest. Actually forgot to mention that just the last time I was talking about it, so wanted to let everyone know.
Sounds like an exciting time for everyone in Australia who can make it, or if any international people are listening and have a trip coming to Australia in, you know, April 6th ish range, so you know, now's the time to go sign up. We'll have links to the tournament in our show notes, along with links to your store, which is, can you remind us about the store name?
Decked Out Gaming is the name of the
Gaming.
Yes.
And do you have a Discord, or is most of the Discord happening over at Good Times World? I know we've got our own Discord at Just Another Kill Team Discord, but where can people find your team and the rest of the players that you are collaborating with?
So we have a Facebook chat group that was born out from Warhammer Chatsuits community chat group. And that we were hard to find some resources that we often look about. So we actually have our own Discord server, Skill Issue. The link will be shared. And hopefully Travis and Jason is kind enough to share that. Anyone can really join. And it's a very local Discord server. There's, it's not really about making, it's not really about growing the community, but it's become a bit of a database storage. And there are, it's really just a place to sit around and know more about the Kill Team overall. You're more than welcome to join and share your ideas.
All right, cool. We'll make sure that those links show up in our show notes. Jay, thank you very much for coming on, talking a little bit about Australian Kill Team and lots of stuff about Inquisition Agents that I'm sure many players have not really conceived of, because, you know, most people are playing Security or some other, or Seek and Destroy or some other stuff. So infiltration, double recon, dashing, Kasurkin, and all that good stuff. Love to hear it. And listeners, thank you for coming by, and hopefully we'll catch you guys in the next one, right?
Thank you guys. I appreciate it. It's been wonderful. Thank you.